WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Gary Oldman has made his reputation playing extreme personalities, like punk rocker Sid Vicious and playwright Joe Orton, who was murdered by his lover. Oldman played Oswald in JFK and Dracula in Coppola's adaptation. Last summer, Oldman starred as a Russian terrorist in the thriller Air Force One. Gary Oldman doesn't appear in his new movie. He makes his screenwriting and directing debut. The film is called Nil by Mouth, and it's set in a working-class neighborhood similar to the South London neighborhood where Oldman grew up. Spousal abuse, alcoholism, and drug addiction are commonplace. In this scene, a mother walks into her pregnant daughter's home to find her daughter swollen and bruised around her face and body. The daughter has been beaten by her husband, but she lies and says she's been hit by a car.
Look, that's where he hit me there, see? See, with the side of the headlights, right? And then I went smack into the road on my face, and then when I looked up, he'd gone. I mean, it was lucky I didn't have Misha with me, you know, because he'd have probably have hit her as well.
He'd have killed her. I mean, didn't no one see it? No one mentioned about
it? No, it was down, you know, down the back, down by the old shops, down there.
Well, weren't you looking?
Yeah, of course I was looking, Mummy. He just seemed to come out of nowhere. And then when I looked up, the had gone.
What's the hospital say? Is the baby all right?
Yeah, you know, they gave it a x-ray scan thing, and you know, they had a little look, and that is just bruising and that. But I don't know how I felt, Mum. I mean, look at my fingers there, look.
Oh,
they hurt the most, they hurt more than this.
Well, they broke?
I don't know.
Well, didn't they say?
No, they sort of concentrated more on the baby, didn't they?
The movie is shot in an almost documentary fashion. Scenes are drab and gray. I ask Gary Oldman why.
The film deals with codependency and chemical dependency and absent fathers. And I wanted to really take the gloves off and honestly look at those areas. I think Hollywood just recently, or it's unfair to say Hollywood, but the movies just recently, they've tended to sort of slightly romanticize it and glamorize it. And I can think of, you know, I can think of movies like Pulp Fiction and recently Trainspotting. And obviously it's a very personal film to me. And these are issues and areas that have either directly or indirectly touched me. I know people who are addicted to substances, be it, you know, alcohol or heroin, and I felt that if you're going to portray it and show it, then you should really show it for what it is. It's a killer disease, and it destroys people's lives.
I think that Nil by Mouth connects to your own past. You grew up in a working-class family.
South London, yeah.
Yeah. And the movie's dedicated to your father, who I believe passed away while you were making Sid and Nancy, mm-hmm. and who I believe left your family when you were a boy. How well did you know him? And let me ask you this first. What is it about the film that connects to your father that inspired you to dedicate the film to him?
Well, it's certainly, if he hadn't have left mm-hmm. when he did and died when he did the way he did from alcoholism, I would be, I guess, a different person. You know, that has obviously influenced me and shaped me psychologically. So I don't know whether I would have even made this film or made a film but not about the subject. And as I say, one of the areas that the film deals with is there's no authoritative figure there. There's no father figure in the film. There were issues that were unresolved, I think, with my father. Stuff that, baggage that you carry around with you. And I felt that it was time to not forget, but in some way forgive. It seemed to me a very obvious and a very fitting dedication. And also, I think I've achieved some, you know, some great success in my career. And my father has not been around, wasn't around to see any of this.
One of the main characters in your new movie is an alcoholic who's also abusive to his wife, and she needs to figure out whether to stay with him or mm-hmm. leave, and that's going to be a hard choice for her. Was your father abusive when he drank?
No. My father is the father that Raymond in the movie talks about. But my
And that's a father who was just emotionally unresponsive.
Yeah. And I don't remember my father saying he loved me. You know, I'm sure he did, but there's a lot of stuff that I think I've blocked out. A lot of stuff I don't want to remember. But I can't remember him saying that to me. So that fueled that area, that other dynamic of the history of Raymond, mm-hmm. in a sense. But my father was not an abusive man, and he certainly didn't beat my mother. But those kind of characters, as we say, you know, the unsavory kind of character who has been on the outskirts of the family, and we've had our ups and downs with them. You know, domestic violence and abuse, you know. We've had our share of it.
We theoretically know a lot more now about how to deal with addiction and codependency than we did when you were young, you know. But that doesn't make it any easier for anybody, I think. How did your mother deal with it when your father drank?
I think she just ignored it. That's still there for us, for these people in the movie. For those people back there that are still living like this. Well, I mean, I've moved on from that neighborhood and that life, if you will, and I became an actor, and you can transcend class and mingle with, you know, rock stars and kings and queens, you know, in this business. And my life has a broader outlook on life. And one has developed a palate, and there's a certain sophistication that has come with that. And if I have a problem, I certainly don't have a problem with entertaining the idea of maybe going to see a therapist or get help. But these people won't in this film. These people need help, and unfortunately, they won't get it because they don't have the access. So really, it hasn't changed. It hasn't changed in 25 years.
Right.
For that neighborhood, for that culture.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Why don't you describe the neighborhood that you're from? Which I imagine is like the neighborhood depicted in the movie.
Yeah, it's very much like the neighborhood in the movie. I would say it's matriarchal in as much that the men are out and they're out working, and when they're not working, if they're not working, in fact, they spend a great deal of their time, you know, up the pub, and the women are at home, as my mother was. And as my sisters have done, you know, assuming some responsibility, looking after the kids. And it always struck me that the men were out up the pub, you know, talking nonsense, and the women were back at home talking common sense. And they were what was really holding it together. But I think it's hard because, you know, Valerie, who is Raymond's wife, played by Kathy Burke in the movie, she, you know, a lot of women are trapped, almost captive, held hostage in that kind of situation, in that kind of marriage. And they live in these high rises, and, you know, the spaces in these places. I mean, they're no bigger than the studio I'm sitting in here, in this little booth. And when you're a captive in a house with that rage and that anger, a lot of people still live like that there, you know?
I know there was a period in your life when you had a problem with alcohol. Did you feel that connected to your past and to your father's own problem? And did you feel like you were going to have the same kind of problems that he had? I mean, did you feel any of that connection?
Oh, yeah. You start to... I was working from a blueprint, you know, almost, even though I don't remember him being around to influence me as someone that I looked up to and watched and listened and as some kind of role model. It didn't even matter that he had not been there. I was still working to some kind of almost predestined sort of pattern, and following, making a lot of the I think have made a lot of the same mistakes. I'm walking in his shoes.
When someone's an alcoholic in the neighborhood that you grew up in, you know, he is going to hang out at the local pub probably and come home and maybe be really crude and maybe even violent around the family, but he's going to live in a really circumscribed world. When you're a movie star and you have any kind of addiction problem, you have the money and the celebrity to kind of cater to any appetite that you have. Mm. And I think it's a kind of like different world for someone who has an addiction problem, who's famous and has access to money.
Yeah. Well, also you're working, you know, you make money, and in turn, you make money for other people. You become like the sort of a tiny microscopic kind of Gary Oldman industry, you know, within the industry. So that there's people earning money, and of course they want to say yes.
They want to indulge
sir.
You,
you're,
right?
Yeah, you're brilliant. You're this. Yeah, man, you haven't got a drink problem. Yeah, you're just wild. You're out there. You're an artist. You're on the edge, you know. And that old thing of like, you know, I need the drink because, you know, I've got to, it gives me an edge. It gives me a spark, and all of that. That is, you know, bull. Really, that's not the artist talking. That's a drunk talking. That's
right,
the booze
right.
Talking.
Well, don't you think artists can be pretty good at using that, though? You know, like,
oh,
I need it for my art to get in touch. And
oh yeah, you know. I think that you can use it creatively, and I've certainly, in my battle and struggle with it, and out of my recovery, I've tried to use it in this movie in a very constructive way. But I think that sometimes these you know, you can really get indulgent, can't you, with pain and mm-hmm. all that misery. Mm-hmm. You can just kind of, you can, and again, that's the drunk in you, or the addict in you, that wants to keep you the addict. You know, there's always an excuse, because you can say, hey man, I feel depressed and whatever, I'm going to have a drink. Hey, the sun's shining, let's have a drink. Hey, it's right. Your birthday, let's have a drink. It's Christmas, hey, it's a funeral, let's have a drink. So there's always an excuse for it, you know? And at the end of the day, you know, I mean, I just had to turn around and say, I ran out of excuses.
My guest is Gary Oldman. His new movie is called Nil by Mouth. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Gary Oldman is my guest, and he makes his screenwriting and directing debut with his new movie, Nil by Mouth. Everyone in the movie has a very kind of thick working-class accent, and
yeah.
A lot of the talk in the movie is just kind of riffing with a lot of expletives, you know, telling colorful stories and so on. I'm wondering if you had that kind of accent when you were growing up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you see, well, you're talking to Gary Oldman, who went to drama school, you see. And I had to lose all of that, you see, because you can't talk like that if you're going to do Shakespeare. And my training was for the theatre. But when I was growing up in South London, yeah, I used to talk like that, you see, you know, when I was a young kid, yeah.
Now, do you think that affected your early career and your ability to get into drama school in the first place?
No, it didn't, because if you think of some of those great actors in the past, I mean, you know, if you think of someone like Albert Finney, he's from Manchester, he used to talk like that, Albert. You know, if you look at those early films like Saturday Night, Sunday Morning, and you look at Tom Courtney and The Loneliness of the Long Distance Runner, and all of those that early, late 50s, early 60s work, Michael Caine, mm-hmm. who played in the Ipcress file, who played that character, Harry Palmer. He wore that Cockney accent, you know, around his neck like a chain, you know. But no, because they're looking for that raw talent. They're looking for something that is obviously not honed and shaped, and then they do their work on you, you know. And they try and iron out some of the rougher edges.
No, I know when you were young, your father was a welder. And I'm wondering if you remember what the meaning of work was in your family and in the families around you when you were growing up, if the people who had jobs liked their jobs, and what it would have meant to you to find work that you loved.
Yeah, I think I'm very lucky. I'm very, very lucky that I'm in a profession where, for the most part, I wake up in the morning and I want to go in and do a job.
Yeah, what did work mean when you were young?
Just earning enough money so that at the weekend you can spend it and not think about working next week, really.
Did you have a fallback plan if you didn't become an actor?
No, I didn't. I did work. I worked in. I was a Saturday boy in this store called British Home Stores, and I sold sports equipment, and I worked in a shoe shop and stuff like that. I mean, I did some other stuff before I went to college, but I didn't really have a backup. I had no plans. Actually, there wasn't even a plan for this crazy thing I wanted to do called acting. You know, it just seemed like a good idea one day. I'd never read plays or seen plays or any of that. You know?
What about movies? Did you see a lot of movies?
Yeah, I saw a lot of movies. Yeah, the very first movie I saw at the cinema was A Hard Day's Night.
Oh, the Beatles.
I guess I must have been about six.
Wait, now how did your accent compare to their Liverpool accents? Because, you know, Americans were dying to have the Beatles' Liverpool accents when they got really big in the 60s.
Yeah. Oh, the old Liverpool like that, eh?
Yeah.
The old sound of John Lennon used to talk like that. It's amazing that you can, there's a different accent in North London, and then you can just travel a couple of miles, and then it changes again. It's very much like here in the States.
Oh, sure, even from New York to Boston, it's different.
We're just all on top of one another because we're just in this tiny little island. So it's just that you have to travel further to hear the change. But in England, it's odd because, you know, 10 miles up the road, the accent has, again, completely changed. But the Liverpool accent is sexy. And then when it comes out of the mouth of Paul McCartney and John Lennon, it's even sexier.
Right. There's a character in your new movie, Nailed by Mouth, who in one scene, there's Apocalypse Now is on television or on video.
Mm, yeah.
And so this character just recites word for word along with Dennis Hopper as Hopper does one of his monologues in the movie. Was this you as a kid? I mean, not necessarily with Apocalypse Now, but I mean, with other films, did you like memorize long sequences by heart and recite them along with the movies?
Yeah, I used to do that. I just never seen that. You know, we're so our culture's so influenced by movies and by television. And I'd never seen that in the film where someone had could mimic the character and talk along with it as they were doing it. And I know many people that can do it. I know a lot of actors that can do it. And I have chunks of dialogue from films that I can recite.
Which ones?
I can think there's some stuff from Raging Bull, a bit from sort of Taxi Driver, Scarface, was it Lenny? You remember the
right? Yeah, Lenny with Dustin Hoffman as Lenny Bruce.
You know, I can who I try to do on a good day. You know, you never know. So I have and some stuff of. You know, because we all like walking, so there's some deer hunter I do.
Oh, I hear a little Christopher Walken coming in through there.
Yeah, yeah. So I do a bit of that, and we have fun with that. And my friend, the painter Julian Schnabel, I mean, he's watched The Godfather 500 times to the point where the dialogue from the movie peppers his conversation, and you kind of go, hang on a minute, where do I know that from?
Right,
you know?
And exactly.
God, that's The Godfather, you know.
What's your favorite Taxi Driver monologue?
Well, the mirror, I guess.
Are you talking to me?
I also like the De Niro at the beginning of Raging Bull. The two scenes that kind of bookend the movie, with him in the mirror in the nightclub, you know. But us actors, we when we get together, I was recently working in London on a movie that comes out in April called Lost in Space, and I was working with Matt LeBlanc from the series, the TV series Friends, and we would do Al Pacino all day, you know. We would just do scenes from Scarface and Serpico. We're just having fun. So I thought it'd be great to. I thought I'd like to see that in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I put the scene in, of course, and then people sort of say to me, you know, the way you use the music and it crosses over, and there's Raymond, who is this lonely figure in the kitchen, and he's partially naked and he's got his hand up on his head, and someone said to me, yeah, man, he said that's the Apocalypse Now, and that's Brando, isn't it? And you know, I love the way that the themes and the images that you've used, and of course, to sound like a very sort of intellectual, very intelligent director, I said, yeah. That's exactly what it was.
Gary Oldman, he makes his screenwriting and directing debut with the new film Nil by Mouth. He'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with actor Gary Oldman. He makes his screenwriting and directing debut with his new film Nil by Mouth. Last summer, he starred in Air Force One, which has just come out on video. He played a Russian terrorist who hijacks the president's plane. Here's Oldman's terrorist on the phone with the vice president, played by Glenn Close.
What are your intentions?
What arrogance to think you could ever understand my intentions.
I want to understand what it is that you want.
What do I want? When Mother Russia becomes one great nation again. When the capitalists are dragged from the Kremlin and shot in the street. When our enemies run and hide in fear at the mention of our name, and America begs our forgiveness. On that great day of deliverance, you will know what I want.
Gary Oldman first established himself on screen as punk rocker Sid Vicious in the 1986 film Sid and Nancy. Here's a scene from the film.
Hello, the land of snow, and so I face the final curtain. I'm not a queer. I state my case, of which I'm certain. I've lived a life that's full, and each and every highway, and not much more than this. I did it all.
Now, I think your breakthrough movie role was in Sid and Nancy, where you played Sid yeah. Vicious of the Sex Pistols. How did you get that part?
Well, it's a strange history to that, because I was working in the theatre. I was doing a play, and Alex Cox and his producers, Eric Fellner, came through, were looking for the guy to play Sid, and they saw me in the play.
And we met, and then they offered me the part, and I turned it down.
Oh, that was smart. Yeah, why'd you turn it down?
Because I was not really interested in Sid Vicious and the punk movement. I'd never followed it. It wasn't something that interested me. It was, you know, the script I felt was banal, and who cares, and why bother, and all of that. So, and I was a little bit sort of with my nose in the air and sort of thinking, well, the theatre, you know, so much more sort of superior and all of that. You know, I was a young kid. Anyway, so I ended up turning it down and turned it down again. And then my agent called me and he said, you know, look, you're crazy. You've never made a movie before. But I was earning at the time a little under £100 a week at the Royal Court Theatre, standing on the stage, doing all that very worthy stuff, you know. And my agent said to me, well, they do want to pay you $35,000 to do this movie. And I thought, hmm. And so it's strange. I was talking about this the other night, that great art is not always necessarily where you think you're going to find it.
Right. It's a terrific performance. I really like that film a lot.
And so my initial motivation for doing it was money.
Uh-huh.
And yet it was, in many ways, a landmark performance and a landmark film, and it got me going. And then there's those other situations where something comes with an incredibly good pedigree. All the pieces are falling into place. You know, it's going to be just wonderful and artistic, and you know, and you go into it and it doesn't happen and it doesn't work.
You were terrific in Prick Up Your Ears, which was a biographical movie about the British playwright Joe Orton. Did you know his work having started on the stage?
Yeah, I've been in a couple of Joe's plays. And most notably, I suppose, is a very famous play of his, Entertaining Mr. Sloan.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew him from the theatre, and he was one of the playwrights that we studied in college.
Joe Orton was gay, and a lot of the movie revolves around that aspect of his life.
Promiscuous.
There's even scenes in, like, you know, public bathrooms with him, you know, cruising. And there's, I think, for its time, the mid-80s, there was the kind of kiss that you wouldn't usually see in films. I mean, there was very little about homosexuality in films then. And I think a lot of actors would have been afraid to take that role, afraid that, you know, the public wasn't ready for it, that they'd think the actor was gay and that would hurt the actor's career, etc. Was that ever a consideration for you?
No, it may have done. It could have done. I never thought about it like that. I never looked at it like that. I just thought, whoa, what a great character, what a great part. And I was working with the guy, Fred Molina, the actor who played Joe's lover in the film, Kenneth Halliwell. Dear friend of mine, lovely man, Fred. That was his first screen kiss.
Oh.
For Fred, yeah, kissing me. And he said to me afterwards, he said it was very nice, but he said, just shave next time. He said it was like rubbing my face up against sandpaper. Now we know what you girls have to go through.
The women put up with. have you seen Alfred Molina in Boogie Nights?
I haven't seen Boogie Nights
yet. He's really good in it.
Yeah.
So, do you think that after playing these really, you know, like big eccentric characters like Sid Vicious and Joe Orton, that you started to get roles of extreme personalities? I mean, yeah. I can't think of any roles where you played someone who would be considered average. You know, the typical Englishman or the typical American.
Yeah, no, I know. I became the sort of bio kid. It was, you know. He lived, he's famous, get Gary Oldman. You know,
but it was also, you know, he's got a huge ego, or he's really crazy, get Gary Oldman.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, he's really over the top, he's an incredibly eccentric character, get Gary Oldman.
Well, maybe those parts didn't start off like that. It's just... Maybe I turn them into... Maybe it's my influence on those roles that make them... That probably they feel bigger than life and a little over the top. I mean, I do go for it a bit as an actor, I must admit.
This past summer, you starred as the terrorist in Air Force One.
Yes.
And I'm wondering what you think the pros and cons are of working in, you know, major motion picture action thrillers with big budgets. And because I would imagine that there's both, that there's some great things and some drawbacks.
Well, I think that, you know, I am sometimes in movies that I don't particularly like or that I wouldn't go and see. And I think that Wolfgang Petersen is a fine filmmaker, and I had a lot of fun on that film. I had a lot of fun working with Wolfgang, and it's technically very, very well put together. But at the end of the day, you know, it's not quite my cup of tea. But I invested a lot of my own money in Nil by Mouth. I wanted creative freedom, artistic freedom, and that comes with a price tag.
Right.
So, in a sense, a movie like Air Force One will subsidize the other work.
Now, how will you feel if you lose money on Nil by Mouth? Say,
oh, I have done.
Excuse me?
I have done.
You've lost money?
I will. And I won't see the money. I'll see some of it, but not much.
But it's worth it to you if you do lose money?
Oh, yeah. When I set out to make this film, my partner and one of the producers of the movie, Douglas Urbanski, we had discussions about this. And I said, you know what? If this doesn't get any distribution and no one sees it, I don't mind, because, you know, I made it for me and a couple of friends. And I said, I will pull it down from the shelf and dust it off and maybe show it to a couple of mates every couple of years. So I didn't worry about any of that. And I was quite prepared to go in and do this and make a loss, you know.
Toward the end of Nil by Mouth, there's a scene in a bar where people from the neighborhood are singing, and one of the women who sings is the grandmother in the movie.
Mm. Yeah.
And the actual vocal credit at the end of the film, you know, in the credits, is to someone whose last name is Oldman. Is the singer someone who's related to you?
Yes, Kathleen. It's my mother.
Oh, and so
Yeah, my mother sang that song. I remember my mother singing the song. Also, over the credit sequence.
Did I mention the song is "Can't Help Loving That Man"?
Can't Help Loving That Man of Mine. And over the credit sequence, I use the Andrew Sisters singing "By Me and Mr. Shun." You know,
Mr. Shun.
Yeah, Mr. that's there because my mother sings that song and harmonizes with my two sisters.
Oh.
And my mother sang that song in that pub in the movie. Most of the locations are the actual locations. So my mum has stood on that stage in that pub and sang that song
in real life as well as in the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And how did you feel about her singing in pubs? Did you go listen to her when you were young?
Yeah, she was never. She has a terrific voice, but she's. I mean, you can. I mean, that's not a bad rendering of that song, and she's 76, so that's not a bad set of lungs on her.
No, that's what's sweet about it. I mean, she's obviously an amateur, but there's something really nice about the way she sings it.
Yeah, but she would get up and very much like they do in the scene. Really, it was. Uh-huh. You know, go on, Mum, go on, get up and sing a song. Give us a song, and. So there's all through the movie, it's a very, very, very personal film, because all through the movie there's I have little things on the wall, and I have something sitting on the mantelpiece in a shot, and it's and if you knew, you know, you would spot it or recognize it, or so it's littered with a lot of that stuff, you know.
Well, Gary Oldman, I really want to thank you for talking with us.
Thank you.
And good luck
for
with the movie.
Me. Thank you very much.
Gary Oldman makes his screenwriting and directing debut with the new film Nil by Mouth.